Hey, I'm Melissa.
I'm Jam.
And I'm a chemist.
And I'm not.
And welcome to Chemistry for Your Life,
the podcast helps you understand the chemistry of your everyday life.
Okay, Jam, so we're here for Smoke Detectors Part 2.
Okay, right.
And I think it's going to be fun. It's going to be a quicker episode.
Okay.
But before we get into that, I want to address the fact that we are now an audio-visual podcast.
Correct.
Not just an audio podcast.
Right. And we did that for the first Smoke Detectors episode, as well as our Q&R, mm-hmm. getting used to it, working out some of the kinks a little bit and stuff. But it's going to mean some changes for you listeners.
Yeah. So we might reference things that are visual, like the cute flower hat I'm wearing today.
We did that sometimes too before. Where I'd like make a weird gesture with my hands and then you'd be like, for those listening, he's doing this weird thing with his hands. Or whatever.
But now you can see it in the flesh.
Yeah.
Also, this cute hat was a birthday present from Jam and his wife. So if you want to see it, you could just go to the YouTube channel now.
Yeah.
But also, I think that means there's going to be some changes in terms of we're not going to edit out every little cough or sneeze. It's going to be more like a live show.
Correct. Yeah, we want the audio version of the podcast and the video version of the podcast to be exactly the same in every way, except that, you know, one's video, one's audio. And so same length. You know, same episode, and people just get to pick which way they prefer. But one of the things we've always done is cut out like coughs and stuff and just things that, you know, it's for y'all's sake and whatnot. But to keep things consistent in our workflow the same, we're not going to, you know, have tons of jump cuts of every cough that ever happens in the video. Cause that would be probably pretty annoying, honestly, if it kept like cutting out random little bits and stuff. And so in the audio, there may be an occasional cough or sniffle or whatever. And that'll be a little bit of an adjustment for you guys that are audio folks, but I don't think it'll be crazy. And hopefully you won't be annoyed with us.
Yeah, hopefully not. It's just the way I think of it is like, oh, now we're doing a live show, sort of, quote unquote, live. So you get the raw and unedited coughs and sneezes that you would miss out in a not live show.
Right. We always were pretty minimal on the editing. Like, I'm sure there's some podcasts that do way more than we do, but we have always done some of it and stuff. So that'll be a little bit of a different feel. But yeah, you're getting a live and unfiltered, for the most part, kind of deal.
Yeah.
But also, we hope you guys like it. We hope you guys like the option for YouTube and stuff. And if you've got thoughts and things so far, let us know. We'd love to hear them.
We love to hear feedback, and we always want to keep the show improving, which is why we're trying to do it on YouTube video anyway. So if you want to see the show, you can check us out at youtube.com/@chemforyourlife.
Right.
Right. Okay. So are you ready for Smoke Alarms or Smoke Detectors Part 2?
I am ready.
Me too. I mentioned this in the last episode, but I just want to mention this again. There were not a lot of like peer-reviewed journal resources about this.
Okay.
A lot more of it came from government resources. So like the National Fire Protection Agency, the NFPA was one, and NIST, which is the National Institute of Standards and Technology, is another one.
Okay.
So I did more government resources than chemistry resources, but the chemistry checks out. Like, what they're saying makes sense to me as a chemist. So that's why I was like, well, I trust this website. And I think because it's not, chemists aren't researching how smoke detectors work. There's not a lot of that.
Right, right. Yeah, that's interesting. And it's like, can we trust the government? You know? It really brings up the question.
I have lots of questions about what happens in the government, but that's not what we're talking about today. Today we're talking about smoke detectors and those questions.
Right, right.
The ones that I have answers to.
Right.
Okay, so we talked about the two types of smoke detectors last episode. Do you remember that?
Yes, I do.
Okay, what do you remember about the two different types?
I remember that the type we talked about last time we recorded was the radioactive ion connecting the charges, that kind of stuff.
Yep.
And smoke interrupts a connection, and that's how it knows smoke's there.
Yes.
And I remember you telling me a little hint about what the other kind was. Mm-hmm. and I don't remember.
That's okay. Maybe our listeners probably don't either.
Yeah, probably not.
So the other one is called photoelectric, and it uses light. It's light sensing instead of charge sensing.
Okay, cool.
But there are very similar. There's a few key differences. I kind of think of this one being the inverse of the other one. You'll see what I mean.
Okay.
But essentially, it uses the principle of a light source and a light sensor. And this is a good chemistry lesson because chemists actually use this in instrumentation a lot.
Okay.
So you used to work at a pool store.
I did, yes.
I'm just telling you that for the first time now. Just kidding.
I did?
And you used to put a vial of something with clear sides down into a sensor and it shone light through it.
Yes, yes. And this has come up before, but I can't remember what episode, but yeah. It's like been related to
the bleach one.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
And I feel like that on that one, it put the light through. Did that tell you the concentration of what was in the water, or what did it tell you? Do you remember?
Yeah, it told us a bunch of things. So I would actually test, like, for every person's pool water I tested, it was like 5 different vials.
Okay.
And I'd like pop the like foil thing and squirt a little bit of water into all of them. It told us pH, the concentration of chlorine, I can't remember. There were multiple things, I guess.
Was there maybe like an absorption?
Maybe so. Like sort of how saturated the stuff, water currently was. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think there was one that maybe tested for like the amount of potential like growth in microbes could be in it. Like how close are you to having an algae fest tomorrow?
Yeah, an algae fest.
But I can't remember. I just remember there being like 5.
At our apartment has been an algae fest. I think I showed you pictures. It's like lime green some days that I'm like, okay.
Yeah.
That's an algae fest if I've ever seen one. Okay, so that makes sense to me, especially the concentration one or the pH, because what essentially I used a lot whenever I was doing research in the organic chemistry lab is we worked with highly colored molecules.
Mm.
And if you had them, they had to be diluted to a certain level so that the light could pass through them. But when the light passed through them and then it went over to a sensor, so you have like a little vial, the light passes through and hits a sensor. That light, even though it might not look changed, is changed for passing through this material.
Okay.
And we could see what wavelengths of the light had been absorbed by the molecules versus which ones were able to sort of pass through.
Got it.
And that's if something's, you know, pretty dilute. But we're using a different feature of light in our smoke detectors. And that's, in this case, the light won't pass through something and instead it can be deflected off.
Okay.
So light could either pass through things and it may be absorbed, or light will be reflected or deflected, you know,
right.
Depending on how you kind of want to think about that. So that's a little bit of chemistry background for you.
Okay.
Now, in this smoke detector, it has, in photoelectric, specifically smoke detector, it has a beam of light shining unbroken. And actually, instead of the sensor being right on where the light shines, like it usually is in instrumentation, the light's a little off.
Okay.
So maybe it's at an angle, right? And as long as the light is not interrupted by anything and it doesn't hit the sensor, no alarm happens.
Okay.
But if smoke particles, especially the light or white colored ashes, start to enter into the smoke detector, those are relatively large and they will start to deflect the light and make it to where it hits the sensor. So instead of the light coming and just being uninterrupted, the light will hit a particle and go down to where the sensor is, or up, or wherever the sensor is located.
Okay.
Goes off at an angle. And the light will be scattered all over the place, so it doesn't just go to that sensor. But if enough light hits the sensor for it to realize that there's something happening, that's when the alarm sounds.
Okay.
So the other one, the smoke particles interrupt the flow of charge, and that's when the alarm sounds.
Mm-hmm.
In this one, the smoke particles interrupt the flow of light, and they deflect the light over into the sensor. And once the sensor detects that light, then the alarm sounds.
Okay.
So see the difference there?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It's similar-ish, except instead of breaking a current, it's hitting the sensor.
Yeah, it's interesting. I would have assumed, I think, if you just asked me to guess, that the it would work similarly, but just with light, but it would be like, if the sensor stops detecting the light,
yes,
then it does that. But it's interesting that they made the choice to do the other way around. I'm sure there was good reason. And maybe it's more reliable or something like that, but.
I also wondered if there are ones where it's like a constant stream of light and does it get interrupted? But I wonder if the beam is too large, you know, maybe it would be hard to interrupt as much, or maybe, yeah, I don't know. I wondered about that same thing, is why they went that route. And if there's anybody in, it's probably an engineer, probably like somebody like my husband. if you know how smoke detectors work, hit us up. Why did they design them that way? I'd love to know.
Yeah.
Or if there are some that are the uninterrupted beam of light and then the particles interrupt it.
Yeah.
So that's a quick little, I told you it was going to be quick.
Yeah.
About how photoelectric fire detectors work. Do you want to try to summarize that back to me?
Yes. So in general, I mean, we started off from the place of just talking about how in chemistry, it's actually a common thing to try to use light and the way light behaves as it hits different things to detect the presence of something or the change of something or, you know, something dissolved in something else or whatever. And the way that the smoke detectors use it in this way is actually banking on the fact that when smoke is present, it will actually deflect light into a sensor because the different molecules and particles that are in smoke will start to mess with and interrupt that beam of light, and it actually can bounce off and direct it into a sensor that is there as able to detect light and is ready to sound the alarm once it does. But that just the particles and molecules in our air without smoke seem not to do that in this way. And allow,
not as large.
Not as large. And they allow the beam of light to keep going where it's intended to go and not hit the sensor.
Right.
Okay.
I will say we've had some construction going on in our apartment. And at one point, I guess the shop vac wasn't securely on when they vacuumed. And so a bunch of particles just went all over the place. And that definitely did set off the smoke detectors. So, and for the first time, the smoke detector has been set off accidentally. You know, I was like, I wonder if that's probably the photoelectric versus the, I wonder that's probably the photoelectric versus the ionizing, because these are the, you know, a type of particle that could interrupt it, which that brings me to my fun fact.
Okay. Yes, I'm ready.
So we talked about in the last one, you're like, oh, which smoke detector is better? I don't have a smoke detector in any of my house until all the way down the hallway.
Right. Which I still have not made a decision about because I wanted to hear both of these before I bought a smoke detector. So, but I need to buy one, two, three, I don't know, who knows, several probably.
This is how I reached the conclusion that I think my smoke detector is photoelectric.
Okay.
Okay, so according to the NFPA, that's the National Fire Protection Agency, photoelectric smoke detectors are typically more sensitive to smoldering fires, which produce more white soot.
Okay.
While ionizing is more sensitive to flaming fires. So according to NIST, the National Institute of Standards and Technology, flaming fires, like the ones that ionizing are more sensitive to, tend to produce small black soot particles.
Okay.
And they are produced, they're produced more quickly and in greater number. So they're able to interrupt that current from between the plates more rapidly than smoldering fires.
Okay.
While smoldering fires produces more particles that are larger in size and white or light colored. And so because they're white or light colored, they're more reflective of the light. And so those will be detected and deflect the light or reflect the light more easily onto the sensor.
Got it. Okay.
So because it was drywall, which is white or light colored and large particles, I assumed, I wonder if we have a photoelectric fire detector because that just went off so easily.
Yeah. Were you able to confirm or just?
I don't know how to confirm.
Yeah. I mean, unless you could like unless it was an obvious brand name or model number, but mm-hmm. I'm guessing it would not be a good idea to like take it apart.
But, that's yes. Oh, I was going to get to that about what the EPA says about tampering with them. But I will say because some smoke detectors are more sensitive to one fire and the other are more sensitive to the other type of fire. Actually, many smoke detectors have both kinds of sensing in them.
Oh, so that's smart.
It may be that I have a combo pack.
Right. Okay.
Or my apartment building's a little bit old, so I could see it being just one or the other.
Right, right.
But it definitely works. It's very sensitive.
Interesting.
So you may be able to purchase that kind of fire detector or smoke detector for your home.
Right.
So that it can detect both different kinds of fires.
That sounds pretty smart. I'm guessing they recommend that based on the fact that they create them now. That has both in there.
Yeah.
Sounds like a way of saying, hey, this would be best for you.
Hey, do that. Yeah. And according to the EPA, you should not tamper with or damage your smoke detector because the ionizing smoke detectors do have radiation in them. So they're right. safe as long as you don't tamper with them. They also said they confirmed that it was the alpha particles, which that's what I thought. But remember, I was kind of like,
oh, yeah.
One place said gamma. I'm not really sure.
Right.
Alpha particles are larger. They're closer to the size of an atom and not as small as some other radiation. So they really can be contained easily with a barrier. And that's why the ionizing smoke detectors are generally regarded as safe.
Got it. Okay.
But you don't want to like, you know, lick them or whatever. Yeah, right. Don't damage them. Don't tamper with them. Leave them on the ceiling and replace them when they have expired and keep the batteries up to date and you'll be good.
Got it. Okay, cool. Cool.
Okay. So does that answer all your questions about smoke detectors?
I think so. I thought of a fun fact, or not really a fun fact, but something that is related to this one, the light, what'd you call it again?
Photoelectric.
Mm-hmm. I was just thinking about the fact that our Roomba, we have one of those little robot vacuums, and I slowly discovered the way it can tell when it's full mm-hmm. is actually similar. This is not research, but this is based on like a lot of trial and error. Uh-huh. Is that we had, you know, a renovation in our house happen in the summer mm-hmm. and it was a lot of dust going on. And I discovered that ever since then, our Roomba was really overreactive, thinking it was always full. And I had a really hard time getting it to change. And like the whole thing got pretty dusty, mm-hmm. but I like emptied the bin, all kinds of stuff. And I finally figured out that there's these two places in the bin that actually have a little window pointing to each other. It's pretty easy to miss. And they were both just covered in dust. So I wiped those off. So it might be the opposite thing where actually the beam needs to mm-hmm. see, you know, hit the sensor. If it doesn't, then it says it's full.
Yeah.
But I wiped those off and ever since then it's been so much better.
You know, that made me think there's also like garage door openers.
Yes.
They often have that safety feature on the bottom where if the beam of light gets broken, it uh-huh. stops. So yeah. I wonder if that's similar
too. Yeah, it's gotta be similar. Yes. But it's just funny because I kept wondering, like there was no indicator, no clear thing that says this is where the sensor is. Probably because most people don't really need to know. And they'd rather you just empty the bin, not like game the system or whatever. But there's so many parts of the Roomba I was looking at that I was like, what? Which part is telling? Where's the smart thingy?
Look at you engineering that situation.
But it just took me a long time. I'm sure smarter people would have figured it out faster.
I wonder if you had already learned about smoke detectors, if you would have figured that out faster.
I bet I would have.
Because you're like, I know something else that
gets
interrupted by particles.
Yeah. And I wouldn't have thought some sort of light sensor like that would have been the thing.
Yeah.
I would have thought something else. I don't know what I thought, but it just occurred to me for that to be the main way to do it. But it makes total sense now that I think about it.
I also think the Roomba probably makes a lot of use of light and light sensing to help it not run into things.
Yeah, totally.
That's my guess.
Yeah.
Okay, so next thing I wanted to shift gears to, because that's a shorty.
Right.
So I promise to also, I just keep hitting the mic. I promise to also teach you a little bit about those fire sprinklers.
Oh, so this is
it's not just smoke alarms. It's more like fire emergency responding equipment.
Yeah.
So do you have any idea how those sprinklers work?
I do have an idea no idea if it's accurate or not.
Okay.
But here's what I remember hearing from someone at some point. I can't remember where.
This is exciting.
is that I know that there are like...
Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you sell everywhere, from their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system. Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. What I love about Shopify is how no matter how big you want to grow, Shopify gives you everything you need to take control and take your business to the next level. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. and Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/westwoodone, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/westwoodone now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/westwoodone.
They're not just connected to like straight up running water all the time. Mm-hmm. Like they have, maybe they are, but like there's water just hanging out in there ready to go. Mm-hmm. And what I remember hearing was that there's something that's sort of holding the sprinkler closed. Yep. That melts at a very low temperature. And then when it's gone, then the thing can drop down and the water can just start coming out so that it's like, There's fewer smart things, mm-hmm. something like that, it probably is better. And so it's like a good fail safe for like, if it gets hot enough, the sprinkler is turning on whether
one way or the other.
One way or another, water's coming out of this thing. But I've also heard that the water can get super gross in those because it's like just hanging out for a long time. Still does a good job of putting out the water, but or with the fire, putting out the water.
I mean, it puts out water onto the fire.
It does put water out. Yeah. Is that accurate?
Okay, that is very accurate.
Nice.
But there's actually a whole other type that you missed.
Okay, cool. Yeah, but I didn't know about that.
The idea, that's correct, is there's already, so when you have those sprinklers, we have one in our apartment because it's a commercial building. It's usually in commercial buildings, not in homes.
Right.
And so they'll have those sprinklers and they are already connected to the water line. You know, they have pipes that are full of water. And it reminds me of, you know, when you just like, when you have a water hose and you just break the line, you know, to keep it, that's kind of what's happening all the time in our sprinkler system is there's basically just a plug that's not letting the water out. Mm. And I'm assuming because the water's not coming out, no more water is flowing through it. So the water just stays there ready to go.
Yeah.
That's another one of those questions for plumbers that we have. Mm. If there's a master plumber out there, we'd love to hear about it. So they do have the water already like ready to go, but it's just it's almost like the faucet's turned off. Like you said, it's got a plug in it and the plug is heat sensitive.
Okay.
And like you said, one of them is a metal or a mixture of metals that melts at a very low temperature, low enough. It's like, I think it was 158 or something like that. Uh-huh. Fahrenheit, I think, but okay. I didn't get into the details cause I wanted this to be more of like a quick fun fact.
Yeah.
But it does, so the plug is held in by either some metal that will melt and the plug is removed and essentially then the water can flow. There's one other type of plug that is not metal that melts, but it is something that somehow fails with heat. Can you think of what it might be?
Something that's not metal that fails with heat.
That uses chemistry.
That uses chemistry.
And listeners at home or watchers at home, also you can think about it. Is there something that would break or stop working if it was a certain temperature?
Dang. That's tough.
Or maybe even something that would explode.
Oh.
Do you want me to just tell you?
I guess so. I think they would explode.
This makes me think of when I was in my organic chemistry lab in college. So I was probably 20 and I'm now 32. So that just tells you how this has stuck in my mind. I don't remember conversations that happened last week, but this is in my mind. Somebody asked, do we need to heat this up with the lid on or off? I'm pretty sure I've told this story before.
Oh, yes.
And he said, if you heat a closed container, that's a bomb.
Yeah.
And he said it so seriously, and then he just walked away. So he didn't answer them. He just said, if you leave that lid on, it'll explode.
Uh-huh.
That's basically what happens in sprinklers.
Okay.
So you have a glass container. It's sometimes called an ampule, filled with liquid.
Okay.
And the liquid, as it's heated up, what happens when you put heat into liquid?
The molecules get excited,
mm-hmm.
and they spread out more.
Mm-hmm.
They have more energy. They're spreading out, and mm-hmm. they want to take up more space than they maybe have in this case.
Mm-hmm. Yep. If they're in a closed container, they're trying to spread out. They eventually will put enough pressure on that container that it will explode.
Okay. Got it.
And so when that happens, basically the glass ampule is the plug, or is keeping the plug in place. The glass ampule will explode because of the thermal expansion of the liquid, which we first talked about in the sea level rise episode.
Right.
With the other Dr. Collini.
Yes.
And then the water is free to flow.
Yeah. Wow. Dang, that's crazy.
Science.
After you started talking, I was thinking like, oh, I wonder if there's a gas that could be in there that would start to, but like, yeah, liquid expanding makes total
sense. I wondered
if
it was a gas too, but I think probably gases are already so free.
Right, right.
That having the liquid that wants to expand more so, I think because it's, you know, trying to get to a gaseous state is more effective.
Do you remember the little song that our friend Justin sort of made from that saying? When we first talked about if you heat a closed container, it's a bomb thing. One of our friends named Justin put it to the like tune of, if you're happy and you know it.
If you heat a closed container, that's a bomb.
Yeah.
I do remember that.
Yes. Sometimes it pops into my head when I'm like placing the microwave or something like that. I think it said, if you heat a closed container, you'll be cleaning it up later. If you heat a closed container, it's a bomb.
I don't remember this hardly at all. It's like somewhere in my brain, but I don't really remember that
like
verse.
The perfect syllables. It's like perfect. And
he
just put it together and it's great. So, but also it's nice because it's kind of the nice thing to remember. It's like
that
a good,
is so good.
It's a good thing to have like taught in your brain. And
so sing the whole thing.
If you heat a closed container, it's a bomb. If you heat a closed container, it's a bomb. If you heat a closed container, you'll be cleaning it up later. If you heat a closed container, it's a bomb.
That's so good.
That is happy and you know it, right?
Yeah. Isn't that? If you're happy and you know it, clap your hands.
Yeah. I guess it's pretty close.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, Justin, thanks for doing that.
That is really good, Justin. I'm really impressed.
That he typed that on Twitter. And I think I don't remember what he said, but the tune was very obvious from the beginning.
Right.
When he started like doing the syllables or whatever.
Oh my gosh, I love that.
But that's been years ago now at this point.
Well, thanks, Justin, because that will help you remember how a little bomb goes off in your fire sprinklers.
Yes. But for a good reason, so that it can then put out a fire.
Yeah, so they can put out a fire. Yeah. So that's really cool. Thanks. I loved that. I'm glad you brought that up into my brain. Okay, so that's your lesson on fire safety.
Okay.
And how fire safety instruments do their job.
Nice. I love it. I'm very excited to now go and buy some smoke detectors.
I'm so glad. Yeah. And you can do it. You can, in an informed way, say that you want both a photoelectric and ionization.
Yes.
I like ionizing better, but I think technically it's ionization.
Mm, okay.
It doesn't roll off the tongue as well.
Yeah. 100%.
But so now you can go and ask.
Nice. Excellent.
So that's fun. And speaking of fun things, did you do anything fun this week?
I did do something fun this week. I guess I actually did a few fun things.
Me
but
too.
The one that I thought I had ahead of time that I wanted to share was just some of our mutual friends, Matt and Danielle,
mm-hmm.
who used to live here in the town we live in Denton, and have been in a different town about like, you know, 45-50 minutes away for about like, for about like the past, what, like 4 years, something like that now?
I think so. It's been a while.
We both have kids, you know, and so it's also just kind of hard to get time to hang and far enough away where you don't, it's not convenient, but
yeah,
we finally got to hang out with them, and their oldest daughter and our oldest son are really close in age, about 2 months apart.
There's really cute pictures.
Yes. And so it was just fun for them to play and, you know, interact and stuff like that. And the last time we did that, there was a lot of tears about sharing toys and sharing the slide and stuff. This time it went a lot more smoothly.
Good.
And so that was just a lot of fun. And then I don't know. It's just like those kinds of things are always a treat. And you kind of have this realization of like, oh, remember when I was a kid and I play with like my parents, like friends' kids or whatever.
Yeah.
You kind of have this realization of like, oh, I'm the parent now and I'm getting to hang out with friends of mine I haven't caught up with in a while. And
yes,
our kids are playing.
Yeah. You know who I try not to be is that weird friend who's like, I remember you in diapers. And you're like, I have no idea who you are. You know, like you're just some lady my parents know. Don't talk to me like you know me.
Right.
That's what I'm in danger of being now. So I'm in danger of being the weird friend, not like with your kids, but with kids that I knew when they were younger. And then I moved to our town and they're still over in Plano or wherever.
Yeah.
Then I'm at risk. So I always have to stop myself from saying that, but it's a real impulse.
Yeah. 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 That's tough. I think we're all kind of at risk of that. And you know, someone has to point out to us, hey, listen, you just kind of sounded like whatever. Yeah.
You sounded like one of those old people.
Yeah. And then one additional thing I wanted to shout out to, is kind of related I'll just say we're in progress, Mason and I, on doing some improvements to our coffee station.
Oh, you know? Yeah.
And so we've been working on that. It's not quite done yet, but our coffee roasting station is undergoing some good improvements and some
good with an E.
Yes. Good with an E. Good coffee. Good. our coffee company is good.coffee, GOODE.coffee. We've talked about it before, but we have gotten to a point now where we can like upgrade the area a little bit and make our workstation kind of better. So you obviously know about that, but that's been a fun project. And also it's kind of hard for Mason and I to find usual time to work on it. But we did that the other night, which also got to coincide with hanging out with you guys, which was another good thing I wanted to share about. So anyway.
Yeah. So you just got to hang out with a lot of friends. That's your fun thing.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, you kind of stole that because I was going to say it was my birthday this weekend. Mm-hmm. And we kicked off the birthday festivities with a coffee hour that we do with our H Bonder Patreons.
Yes.
And then Jam and I and his wife and my husband all got dinner and just hung out and talked. And it was really fun. It was a really good way to start off the weekend.
Yeah.
And then the next day I get to sleep in and do whatever I want.
Heck yeah.
Some people came to visit me. And then some other people took charge and decided to throw me a 30-second birthday party. For for my Lorelai Gilmore year, because that's how old Lorelai Gilmore was at the beginning of Gilmore Girls, which I remember watching when I was younger than Rory was. So it's just weird to think.
Oh yeah.
Like for my 15th birthday or 14th birthday, I'm pretty sure I got a season of Gilmore Girls, and now I'm as old as the mom. You know?
Yeah, that's crazy.
But so it was Gilmore Girls themed. It was really cute. One of our friends dressed up as Luke Danes, which was hilarious. It was a woman and she pulled it off so well.
Yeah. I didn't know how the character was, but at one point they played an episode and she stood in front of it and I was like, oh, okay. Yep. Nailed it.
It was so easy. Good. So it was just a really fun weekend. And yeah, I had a great time. I got to eat good food. I got to see people I loved. And yeah, it was just so chill. And I've been so busy this year that I think that's one of the first weekends I've had nothing that I had to do. You know, I got to do whatever I wanted that weekend.
That's great. Yeah.
That was really fun.
What if I had shared about our Friday night hang with you guys and then also your birthday party on Sunday? I just took them both. And then I got to go to Melissa's birthday party. And just like, what would you even share about?
I'd have been like, well, you took all mine. It was my birthday. Yay.
That's fun.
It was really fun. So I had a great weekend and now I'm 32. Now I'm in my Lorelai Gilmore year. So thank goodness I don't have a 16-year-old daughter because I don't know that I'd be very good at that.
Yeah, it's a lot.
It is a lot.
It's funny whenever we turn those ages and we're like, oh man, I can't imagine being the age I'm at now, being the age I'm at now and having X, Y, and Z that they had too.
That they had, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, and before we wrap up, I did want to shout out again that SD Pete is the person who suggested this series of episodes. I kind of took it and ran with it.
Yeah.
But thank you so much for sending that. That was a really good question and it sparked two whole episodes.
Totally. So if you have an idea or question or thought about something that could be chemistry related, please reach out to us. Let us know. We've got ideas of our own, but some of these episodes that turn out to be so great are such good questions from you guys. So you can reach out to us on our website at chemforyourlife.com. That's chemforyourlife.com to share your thoughts and ideas. If you'd like to help us keep our show going and contribute to cover the costs of making it, go to patreon.com/chemforyourlife or tap the link in our show notes or the description of the video. to join our super cool community of patrons. We've got so many friends over there that have been really fun to get to interact with. And so we'd love for you to join. If you're not able to do that, though, you can still help us by subscribing on your favorite podcast app and rating and writing a review on Apple Podcasts and subscribing on YouTube. That helps us to be able to share chemistry with even more people.
This episode of Chemistry for Your Life was created by Melissa Collini and Jam Robinson. And Jam Robinson is our producer. Thanks for giving us video, Jam. This episode was made possible by our financial supporters over on Patreon. It means so much to us that you want to help make chemistry accessible to even more people. Those supporters are Avishai B, Bree M, Brian K, Chris and Claire S, Chelsea B, Derek L, Emerson W, Hunter R, Jacob T, Christina G, Lynn S, Melissa P, Nicole C, Stephen B, Shadow, Suzanne S, Timothy P, and Venus R. Thank you again for everything you do to make Chemistry for Your Life happen.
We'd also like to give a special thanks to our team of reviewers who reviewed this episode. And if you'd like to learn more about today's chemistry lesson, you can check out the references for this episode in our show notes or on our website or in the description of the video.
Yay! Thanks for watching or listening, and yay chemistry!
Yay chemistry. Thanks, guys.